From our studios in Cuenca, Spain, I'm Kate Jetmore with Listen, the podcast that highlights the common threads that run through different cultures and unite us as human beings. Today, another conversation in our bundle of interviews focusing on religion and spirituality. We're talking about how to find meaning in this new world we suddenly find ourselves living in, the importance of emotional growth, and understanding the heart as the source of the mind. My guest today is Arun Deva, who's an Ayurvedic practitioner, an Ayurvedic yoga therapist, and a Vinyasa Krama certified yoga teacher. The founder of Arunachala Yoga and Ayurveda, Arun has the pleasure of serving both the National and California State Ayurvedic Associations, including as a board member. Arun teaches internationally, lectures at conferences, writes articles for various publications, has been featured on both radio and television, and has a clinic for Ayurveda and yoga therapy in Los Angeles. He also teaches the Ayurveda and yoga modules for many teacher training programs around the world and is director of Ayurveda at LMU's YTRX program. Born in India, where he began his studies as a child, Arun has made his home in Los Angeles since 1977. Arun Deva, thank you so much for joining us today. First of all, Arun, I think everyone has maybe a vague sense of what yoga is, but there may be some people out there who are wondering why a yoga therapist has been invited to speak on a show about religion and spirituality. So if you wouldn't mind, could you just define yoga for us to provide some context for our conversation?
Well, first of all, let me see if I can distinguish between religion and spirituality. As I do see them as distinct from each other. I like to discern between the two by seeing spirituality as the original essence of any religion. Mm-hmm. However, because each religion is based on a personal or a collective belief, and is most often inspired by the teachings of a highly spiritual or realized master, it gets solidified into a method of seeing, and perhaps even more so of being spiritual. This, of course, creates a bit of a divide and eventually ends up hardening into what we might call a religion or even an ideology. We may take the teachings and solidify them into an ideology that separates us from others who do not share either our religion or our ideology. I believe this ends up losing the very spirit of the teaching.
I am really struck by your use of words like hardening and rigidity, because when I think of yoga, I think of just the opposite. You know, the asana are all about flow and flexibility. Is that how you see it?
Yes. Yes, yes. In fact, yoga, for the most part, similar to Buddhism, tries to avoid this trap by being as secular as they can be.
That's interesting. I mean, Buddhism is defined as being a religion, but I don't think I've ever heard of a religion calling itself secular.
Well, it is my observation, but it is also the observation of many teachers. In fact, many of our yoga teachers and our Buddhist teachers welcome people of all faiths and do not require them or even suggest to them to change their belief systems, because yoga and Ayurveda are very full of practical tools that help us to create more spiritual understandings within ourselves, that they don't very often need to bring in those extra beliefs. They can leave you with your own belief. And for instance, in Buddhism, the main teaching is of meditation or mindfulness. And this is obviously open to anybody, no matter what your belief. And similarly in yoga, you know, we even to some extent start with just working the physical body. So 100%, this is both an observation, and I hope we in the field of yoga never harden to the point where we lose this particular aspect of it. And I hope the same with Buddhism or the Vedantic way of doing things.
I just want to go back for a second because there's so much to talk about. I don't think we've actually managed to define what yoga is and what Ayurveda is. So would you mind taking a moment to do that, please?
I think it's important. I think it's important for me to define both, and not just because many may not know about them, but also because it will share with you how I see them. So for me, yoga is primarily a path of discovery. Of oneself. It begins with, believe it or not, ethics. They are known as yama niyama. And then with physical exercise so that we can keep our bodies healthy. Breathing or energetic exercises to keep our breathing healthy. So when our breathing is healthy and mindful, we can begin to take our attention off the outside world and put it more on our internal world, which is where we are going to find ourselves. And of course, finally, to sharpen our minds into a diamond hard tool, if you wish, which we can then use for self-discovery, and the goal being that we are able to find absolute peace.
And what about Ayurveda? What is Ayurveda, and how does it fit into what you're talking about?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Well, why don't we start with what Ayurveda is. So translated, Ayurveda means understanding life. So it is a medical system that tries to understand life. So it has lofty goals as a medical system. It wishes for all of us to have balanced energies, balanced tissues, because that is what the physical body is made of, balanced mind, intellect, balanced senses, and access to the spirit. It works with herbs, with diet, with lifestyle, with seasonal and daily routines that help to keep us that way. And it works with all stages of life, all health conditions, and was once famous for even its surgical knowledge, which we honestly have not improved that much on even today. In fact, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or if your readers are aware of this, but almost all the surgical instruments that we have today, diagrams of them can be found in a 2,500-year-old text. And this particular text was what two German doctors in the towards the end of the 19th century, they were fascinated by this text, and they came upon a chapter on rhinoplasty. And that's how plastic surgery came into the West. So, and of course, Ayurveda obviously works with disease. Its uniqueness as a medical system, however, is its emphasis on individual natures and treating us so we come back to them. So, it's always seeing disease through the eyes of health.
That is so powerful. There's such a huge difference between focusing on illness and focusing on wellness.
Yes, because if I have an idea of what is health for you, then I can better begin to see if I can bring you back to that, or sometimes if I cannot, then at least working on getting you back to as close to that as I can.
How interesting to think that each person has a unique place of wellness that they can always return to.
That is correct. That is correct, because we're made of energies, and primarily three major energies that we are composed of. The energy of movement, which is best expressed through our neurological system. The energy of fire or heat, which is best expressed through our digestive system. And the energy of water or liquidity or flow, which is primarily related to our immune system. So Ayurveda believes that, of course, we have all of these energies within us, but some of us have more of the neurological system, so we might suffer more neurologically. Some of us have more of the digestive energy, and so we may have disturbances or an extremely good digestive system. And similarly, if we have more of the water and, so to speak, earth elements, then we may find ourselves more physically sturdy and immunologically more strong. Whereas an imbalance in that means our immune system may be affected first. So knowing this, treatment is going to have to vary. And this is very simplistic. It's much more complicated than that, but you know, it's a good beginning to dive into.
Thank you for that, Arun. We are recording this conversation in late May, and it will air in early June. So we are very much still in the woods when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic and all that comes with it, both where I am in Spain and where you are in Los Angeles and all over the world. I would really love to know whether you see this moment as a global crisis or as an opportunity.
Well, of course we are in a crisis, but isn't every crisis an opportunity? How we respond to crisis is what determines who we are, how clear our vision is, or how muddled. I would say realistically, the response to the crisis on a political level, or the level that governs us collectively, has been, shall we say, not cohesive. We have not acted globally. And the pandemic, which of course is a global epidemic, and therefore requires a coherent global response, well, our political systems are not in tune with each other. And even this crisis has not solved that.
How would you define this new world that's revealing itself to us right now? And which of the changes that we're witnessing seem most significant to you?
So before I answer that question, I feel like I didn't complete my thought on the previous question. How do you feel about us? Mm. Because, you know, I didn't want to leave that with an answer that sounds so negative.
Please, please, by all means.
And it occurred to me that if this is true, that our governing bodies are floundering, trying to figure out a global response and perhaps not communicating with each other as well as we would hope they would, then what other choices do mm-hmm. we have? And, I think because of our interconnectivity, which we have access to now, it may be that our golden opportunity will have to rely on people power. We, the people of the world, have to unify and support each other mm-hmm. before our political ship, if you wish, will shift course on the waters. We'll have to see what we have to keep in mind. We have to think far enough as a people to ask ourselves, what will history have to say about us? Mm. As to whether we changed course and saved the future for our children, or we didn't shift course and left a huge big mess for them to sort out.
Mm. Arun, what does that look like, practically speaking? What can we do to take those steps that you're referring to?
We're doing it. It's under our nose. Mm. It's that microphone in front of you. We have the technological capability now to unify as a people. There is a beautiful book called The Open Source Manifesto. And it says our hope lies in the very instrument that is trying to cow us down or train our minds to think a certain way. This open source allows us to, we are using our brains so much more than we ever have before. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. much of that usage is under the control of propaganda or ideology, but it also mm-hmm. is allowing us to begin to think globally, talk to each other globally, and we're hearing thoughts and ideas that are more based upon not what I can do for the economic world, but what I can do for the human world. And how mm-hmm. the human world basically has to take responsibility for the natural world, because at the moment, instead of taking responsibility for it, we're destroying it. And if we don't change it, then the natural world will fight back. We do have climate change, we do have global warming, and now we do have a pandemic. And it's quite possible mm-hmm. that this is only the beginning in terms of pandemics. And it's not like, you know, we really shouldn't have amnesia over the fact that it wasn't that long ago we had other pandemics. AIDS, for mm-hmm. instance, SARS, for instance. Mm-hmm. But it's possible that we dealt with them a little better than we're dealing with this one. And we have to question mm-hmm. why that is. And we not only have to question why that is, we also have to question how we have allowed that to be. And that is people power. Mm-hmm. We're already capable of doing it.
Thank you, Arun. Thank you for your words of hope. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back to continue our conversation with Arun Deva. Back in a second.
Listen is sponsored by RAF, cutting-edge cuisine in a traditional setting.
For a look at the RAFS dining experience, visit www.rafsanpedro.es. That's www.rafsanpedro.es. This is Kate Jetmore with Listen. If you're just joining us, my guest is Arun Deva, here to tell us all about his experience as a yoga therapist and Ayurvedic practitioner. Arun, I just wanted to go back to the question I asked you earlier before the break about how you would define this new world that we're seeing each day.
I think it is too early to tell what the long-term changes are going to be. But the short-term result I see as a traumatization of our civilization. Mm. Not that it is the first. In the last 50 years, we have seen so many. Our sort of idyllic world, which we can see from our movies of the 50s and the 60s, showed us moving more towards a more open society where boundaries between people and nations were starting to dissolve. We were exploring different worlds and cultures, even cultural foods were being exported to other lands. And it seems after World War II, we were truly trying to build a harmonious world. We even created two very important global bodies, the United Nations and the World Health Organization. Mm-hmm. But then we fell back upon old ways, made them toothless. Hmm. And it wasn't long before we were back at fighting and starting wars. And with 9/11, I think of that as a landmark. Hmm. I think we really started to give up all our hard-fought-for rights. We started to give them away. Mm-hmm. I fear this pandemic will make our world fragmented again, and that is a pity, because if we do not experience each other's cultures and ways of living, how are we ever going to become a global people?
Mm-hmm. I could not agree with you more. And that really is the heart of this podcast. I mean, it is my most sincere hope with these conversations. The podcast itself is called Listen, which is a one-word reminder that if we just can stop talking for a moment, that we will learn so much just from being around other people and lending them an ear. So I totally agree with you. Arun, I think you'll agree that the only constant in life is change, that nothing is ever static. We're always moving toward something or away from something. Would you agree that that's one way of defining growth?
Growth depends on decay.
Mm. Tell me more about that.
Something decays, and out of that arises something new.
Mm.
Even the question of birth and death applies to every phenomena. No matter how complex or how obtuse that phenomena is. Yoga, Ayurveda, Buddhism are all based on understanding the truth of impermanence.
Mm.
All matter, no matter how subtle, comes together and comes apart, and we perceive it as change.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we act as though nothing changes, or worse still, as though what is will remain what is. We're tidal in nature. We're not fixed.
Mm-hmm.
We're born, we pass into our youth, in which we often feel immortal. And as we age, we find it fading into disease, into old age, and then suddenly we're faced with the reality that we cannot escape death.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel growth is where we glimpse this truth and try and make something positive out of the decay around us. We will, however, have to untraumatize ourselves to do this.
Mm.
To have a positive growth going forward. We can do this. It's like shaking off a bad dream.
Mm.
We cannot stay in the nightmare forever. We have to wake up to the fact that we have made our world, our relationships, and to some extent ourselves, counter growth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that cannot last. Nature will not let it. And if we are not careful, she may find us expendable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What?
Not because she doesn't like us, sorry, but just to do her work, which is growth.
Yeah.
That is her nature.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. What about self-awareness? How does self-awareness fit into, or what role does it play in emotional growth?
We have to be careful with the term self-awareness. I feel it can arouse a counter sense of importance to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of what we are hoping for, realizing that all we think are is in fact, we think that we are is in fact not the self.
Mm-hmm.
What we think we are is just a conglomerate of gross and subtle matter, an ego, an intellect, senses, etc., etc. And it actually prevents us from emotional growth.
Mm. It's interesting to hear your response to this question, because before I asked it, the last thing you said was about nature and how her nature is to grow. And as I was asking the question, I just thought, wow, the word self really leaps out. Like it sort of sticks out in this question, because self doesn't really jibe with the word nature. You know, in nature, there, like, do you hear what I'm saying? I don't really know what I'm saying, but what I hear myself saying is something contradictory. That bringing the self into the question sort of contradicts the bigger picture of nature. Would you agree?
This is very astute, and and I love how you came to this, you know, based on our previous question. From a yogic point of view, nature and the self are two different things. And it's when we, because nature is a phenomena that is in constant flux, it's in constant change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the nature of nature.
Right, right.
And in fact, the nature of nature is to jockey us towards awakening from nature,
mm-hmm.
to come back to the self, which in the yogic way of thinking is we all are a personal eternal self. In the Vedantic view, even this personal self eventually has to merge into an ultimate self,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
God, if you wish. Mm-hmm. In the Buddhist view, in fact, there is no self.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go past the self-awareness of the self as nature, then this question will be answered for us individually. We may find an eternal self. We may find the bliss of merging into a universal self, or we may find the bliss of realizing that there is no self, because even that can be absolute bliss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that particular question, I think, is actually prevents us from seeking ourselves, because it gets lost in an intellectual debate.
Right. You need a little more context, don't you? In what context are you asking me the question?
Right. So I think I feel as though when we talk about the self, we are talking about absolute peace. If we talk about the self in those terms, in that context, then we will find that in nature there is constant turmoil and change, but in the self there is stillness and absolute peace. Mm.
Thank you. Thank you for completing your thought. What about, well, I tried to ask you a little bit about emotional growth. I'm not sure if we actually got there. I'm curious about that. I'm curious about emotional growth. I'm curious about emotional maturity, which is sort of, you know, going in a positive direction during emotional growth. How would you define emotional maturity?
Look, if we buy into the theory of evolution, and it seems it's a pretty accepted or at least a very workable theory, then reptiles have the basis of emotions, like and dislike. And these relate to food and survival. I like food. I like to survive. I don't like to be food. And I do not like to not survive. As we get better at both foraging and survival, the emotions get more and more nuanced. Mm-hmm. When we get to mammals, emotions are pretty much the same caliber as what we humans have. But we have a frontal cortex. Mm-hmm. And that allows us to, much more than any other mammal, because our frontal cortex is so developed, we can override some of our negative emotions with reason and logic. Mm-hmm. Trouble is they never actually go away, the emotions. So we have to transform them.
Mm-hmm. And what does that look like?
Yes, because what does that look like? Look, when the emotions are negative, we see through negativity. Even our reason becomes negative.
Right.
So we have to build emotions that are positive, such as compassion, loving kindness, friendliness, even admiration. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then our reasoning, our rationality, help us in a way that prevents negativity. Mm-hmm. So emotional maturity, to me, is the moving past fear, anger, even grief, which create negative relationships and lead us to becoming arrogant, envious, lustful, greedy, jealousy, even rage. Getting rid of these, in my opinion, is emotional maturity. Mm.
That is so true. I mean, it's so true that, you know, when you put a specific focus in front of yourself or a specific thought or, you know, a preconceived notion, I mean, I don't think I'm alone in the world of, you know, having a person in my life at a certain time in my life when I thought, oh, well, that person hates me or that person adores me. And later it's not borne out. You know, later you find out, wow, they weren't even thinking of me, let alone hating me or loving me, you know? But when we are sure of something, then every single thing that person says or does supports our argument. It holds up what we already have decided is true. And we can't see. We're completely blinded. Am I on the right track with that? Is that what you're talking about?
So The problem is the human mind, which has to juggle both reason as well as emotion. And they often conflict with each other, and they often influence each other. And this is a paradox that causes the human mind, kind of like our sky. Sometimes our sky is full of wind. And we are, you know, we are full of wind. We are full of anxiety, nervousness, flitting from one thought to another. And sometimes our sky is just covered with dark clouds, and we sink into states of depression. So the truth is, and science is starting to acknowledge the reality of this, and that is that our reality is our projection.
Yeah.
The reality that is out there may not always match our projections. And if we do not align with the reality out there, and that's what mindfulness and yoga teach us, is how to step back from our emotional turmoil or our emotional rigidity into a space where the sky is absolutely clear and the sun is shining. And when the sun is shining, you know, there is no question about what is real and what is not.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true that when you find yourself in the space that you're describing, there's no doubt that you're where you need to be. You don't need to think twice about it. Let's take another short break, and we'll be right back to continue our conversation with Arun Deva. It is such a pleasure to share our interviews with you each week, and your feedback means the world to us. Let us know which episodes you're enjoying most and what you hope to hear in the future. I'm also hoping you'll subscribe to our podcast. When you rate and review your favorite episodes, it helps to widen our audience and bring more people into the fold. You can find us on social media and check out our blog on our website at thelistenpodcast.com. We're talking today with Arun Deva about his spiritual life as a yogi and a practitioner of Ayurveda. Before we continue our conversation, I'd like to clue our listeners in on how they can learn more about your work. Why don't you tell people where they can find you, if you have any courses or events coming up, and we will be sure to provide this information on our website as well.
Thank you. So my blog site, that's what I like to call it. It's not a blog and it's not a website.
I like that. Blog site. Okay.
A little merging of the two is Yoga Rasayana. So if I were to spell that, it was Y-O-G-A for yoga. R as in Roger. A, S as in Sam, A, Y, A, N as in Nancy, A, .com, yogarasayana.com. And rasayana, actually, I think everyone has an idea of what yoga means. Rasayana means to rejuvenate. So it's my intention for me to help people rejuvenate their lives using yoga and Ayurveda. So the other title for it is Arunachala Yoga and Ayurveda. So you can find me through both. That's probably the best way to find me and find my writings, as well as all the workshops that are coming up. And I'll take this opportunity to mention the one that is coming up next, which of course at this point is going to go online and then hopefully back out into the world of intimacy, where we actually see and smile at each other face to face. And that one is called Healing the Heart, Healing the Mind.
Okay. Okay. And will that information be on your blog site?
It is up and running.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And I'll just take the opportunity to recommend that anyone who is even remotely interested in working with you, that they take the chance to do so. I had the pleasure of meeting you and participating in I can hear it in Spanish, retiro, a retreat that you ran in Greece many years ago now. I think you still go back there regularly, but when I was there, it was probably a good 8 years ago, something like that. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience, a real watershed moment for me. So thank you, Arun.
That is very kind of you.
Well, it's the truth. Arun, I think I've heard it said that yoga is the coming together of the human mind, body, and spirit. Can you talk a little bit about the intersections of those separate states of well-being? And what's the relationship between the mind and the heart, for example?
Why don't we start with that last part?
Okay.
So, as we just mentioned, I'm doing a series of workshops called Healing the Heart, Healing the Mind. And the subtext actually says healing the heart is healing the mind. So, in the Vedic tradition, the mind is much more than the brain. It includes the senses, which have their own pathway, the intuitive factor, which has its own pathway, the instinctive factor, which has its own, the intellect, even the ego. And yet, in the Vedic way of looking at things, they all originate from the heart. So the heart originates the mind. Now, yoga, in one of its literal meanings, is to yoke or bind together. So, in this sense, we wish to defractionate ourselves, or at least the way we look at ourselves. The body, the mind, the spirit working together or in harmony with each other is what keeps us together. As a saying goes, body and soul. However, I would like to point out another and older and thus more authentic meaning of yoga is stillness. When all activity comes to an end. This is actually what we call yogaschitta vritti nirodha, or the stillness that comes when all disturbances in the mind come to an end and the result is absolute peace. For most of us, this is but a momentary achievement. We all have this experience once in a while. Mostly done in meditation or when we suddenly slip into a trance-like state. But for a yogi, they want this to be their complete experience. They want this to be their lasting experience. In fact, I would say that this is the highest of yoga.
And when you imagine that sort of coming together, that balance that you're describing that results in stillness, would you use the word alignment there? I mean, we talk about alignment in the physical practice of yoga, but would it apply here as well?
I think alignment is a good word. Again, a word is a word. How we use it is important. You know, we can align with evil. We can align with virtue. We can use a pen to write a love letter or a declaration of war. But here alignment of body, mind, and spirit means becoming aware through the mind and body of the spirit. And that, of course, is always a win-win situation.
Yeah.
Because the spirit is that part of us which is always at peace. So, yeah, in the physical practice of yoga, we very much focus upon alignment. We have to start at the grossest level of ourselves, at our body.
I'm really struck by what you just said, Arun, about our spirits always being... did you say at peace? Was that your wording?
No, I said our spirit is absolute peace.
Okay. So would it be fair to construe that it's always there for us to tap into, no matter what?
It is the essence of what... It is our essence. It will... We can abandon it. It cannot abandon us.
So is it always there waiting?
It's not only always there waiting, it is always calling. But sometimes we are deaf to its call.
Yeah.
In fact, once you hear its call, it is a magnetic call that is so strong it can break you away from the gravitational pull of all your... disturbed emotional states.
What I hear you sort of hinting at this, but what does it look like when we are out of alignment? Can you give some examples of misalignment or a lack of alignment that we might have witnessed in our own lives or in the world?
Well, that's easy.
Good.
We do not have ease of body, and we do not have ease of mind. We're out of alignment. And then our spirit is hidden from us. It's obvious collectively that our world is out of alignment, if I may go that far.
Please.
Just look at the confusion, the conflicting information, the anger, the frustration, the difficulties we are facing. They go much beyond the pandemic. Get rid of the pandemic and climate change still looms. This is because we, collectively as a race, are completely out of alignment with each other. This is really where we need to put our energy. As a people, we need to come together. I believe the power of the people of the world uniting for peace is more than any force that may try and oppose it. But to do so, we cannot align with fear, with hostility, with division. We have to align with forgiveness, caring, compassion, charity, truthfulness, and most important, self-restraint. If anything, this is what the pandemic is teaching us. It's the one thing that we have been missing in our lives. Self-restraint. And now we are forced, symbolically on a physical level, to self-restraint. Till now, this is something we have not been encouraged to do. We will have to go against that teaching because it is a teaching of misalignment.
I have to admit, that is not the word I thought I was going to hear you say at the end of that list. Self-restraint, how interesting. I'm going to have to think more about that. It's certainly true. I mean, if you can't leave your house, that's... I mean, it just limits your range.
Yes, it may force you to go inwards.
Imagine. Well, Arun, as we start to wrap up this wonderful conversation, I would love it if you could offer any advice for listeners out there who may be interested in exploring a yoga practice of their own, whether as a path to improving their physical health or as a way of calming the mind and the spirit. Any words as we close?
Yes, I would love to. Actually, yoga is a personal practice. Yeah, we can reduce it to, you know, a yoga class, asana class in a yoga studio. But that, in fact, is a new phenomena. It's not much more than the crudest expression of yoga. Mm-hmm. And yet, even that crude expression of yoga has the power to heal. Mm. If we turn yoga into a personal practice, there is no limit to where we can go in healing our relationship with our own lives, with our loved ones, with our society, and even our world. So I would say, find a teacher who had a teacher. Who had a teacher? Who had a teacher? And so on. So you receive the authentic and original teachings of yoga, and you will indeed improve your physical health, calm your mind, and function from a place of acknowledging your spirit.
Thank you so much, Arun. Thank you for that answer. Thank you for this conversation. And thank you so much for joining us today. I have really enjoyed catching up with you, and I wish you and your family all the best.
Well, Kate, I hope we meet again in the near future. And I am honored and very happy that you asked me to be part of your podcast. So thank you.
Next time on Listen, we'll wrap up our series with our final interview on religion and spirituality. Hope you can join us. The Listen podcast is produced and recorded in Cuenca, Spain, which was conquered in 1177 by Alphonse VIII, the Christian king of Castile, who was married to the daughter of Henry II and Eleanor of Aquitaine. Check out our archives at thelistenpodcast.com. There are 6 full seasons waiting for you there, all free and easy to access. Lauren Lovett is our producer. Caitlin Fisher handles our social media. And Lidia Munoz Solera writes our blog. Editing, tech support, and original music are courtesy of Lucas Munoz Jetmore. I'm Kate Jetmore, and this is Listen.